Well, excellent. I am so thrilled to be with all of you on this second of four conference calls with luminaries and voices of peace from around the world, people who have shared so much and through their lives, through their words, through mainly their examples. And today we are joined by a very dear friend of mine, someone who has been an example of peace for millions of people, Neil Donald Walsh, the author of the Conversations with God series. Neil is with us from Canada, and this is James Twyman. I'm here in Ashland, Oregon. Yesterday, we began this conference call series with James Arthur Ray. You all know him from The Secret, from his work in Prosperity. You may have seen him on Oprah recently. And we had an amazing conversation of how we take the information that we have been learning in The Secret, all about the law of attraction, and how do we take it to the next level to create peace in our lives, in our communities, in the whole world. We've been looking at the law, which, you know, of attracting what we desire, what we call into our lives, but we've been asking the question, is this really only for our own benefit? In other words, do we use this law simply to get what we don't believe we have already? Or is that perhaps just the beginning level so that we can begin to understand the power that we have within us and the power that we've always had within us so that we can begin going to higher levels and attracting things into our lives that don't serve simply the ego but serve humanity? That's what I think this call is really designed for. How do we take this to the next step so that we can help peace prevail all throughout the world? So, Neil, welcome. It's so good to have you. Everyone knows of the work that you've done through your books and through your lectures. So I would love to begin by asking you that question that we just started with. Is the law of attraction or the secret really for helping us get what we want, or is there really a higher purpose to it?
The answer is yes to both questions. It is for helping us get what we want, and it is for a higher purpose, and it can be used for a higher purpose when we simply change or expand what it is that we want, and then we continue to get what we want, and that what we want has shifted and enlarged to include a larger definition of self, like what do we want for ourselves. You ask the question, is the secret, is the law of attraction just for getting something for ourselves? And the answer again is yes, it is. But how do you define the word self? And that's the real key here to using the secret as something more than just a personal mechanism to produce wonderful things in our own individual lives. Nothing wrong with that, of course, and we are encouraged to use it for those purposes, to improve our lives and to make our lives joyful and harmonious and abundant and healthy and just simply wonderful from top to bottom. But after we do that, and or coincident with the doing of that, and as a process by which that can be even more grandly accomplished, we are encouraged by life itself to look beyond the boundaries and the borders of our own individual selves, or if I could put it this way, to expand the definition, as I said a minute ago, to expand the definition of self and what is the self. I would like to talk about The Secret, Part 1, because I think that is really what I want to emphasize here in my opportunity to share with you about The Secret. I, too, appeared in the motion picture The Secret, and I was just very happy and honored and humbled, for that matter, to be coupled with and joined with so many wonderful teachers like James Earl Ray and Michael Beckwith and all the other wonderful teachers who appeared in that motion picture. And I think that the movie and the book which has followed does present us with some important tools, just extraordinary tools, in fact, for the creation of our own reality. But I think that there may be even, as James is telling us here today, more than meets the eye to The Secret, not only in terms of how it works, but in terms of why it works and how we can make it work to produce peace in our world and a global experience of the kind of individual joy that is so often talked about in terms of the law of attraction. So I would like to talk a bit today about part one of The Secret, because I think that part one of The Secret is why it works And part two of the secret is how it works. And I think that in some kind of an interesting way, the movie and the book, as wonderful as they are and as extraordinary as they are, in my mind, they kind of like picked up in the middle of the story and talked about part two of the secret, how to make it work and how it works and can be made to work in our individual lives. But I think part one of the story might receive some additional emphasis now as people have generated new interest in the secret itself. Part one of the story, it seems to me, is why it works. Why does this work? And as someone said on the Oprah show the other day when James Ray and Michael Beckwith were on the air with Oprah about a week or a week and a half ago, a lady got up in the audience and she asked a penetrating question that Oprah agreed was just a wonderful inquiry. She said, this lady in the audience said, I'm hearing all this talk about positive thinking and affirmations and using the power of intention and the law of attraction. And it's all very wonderful, but it seems to say that all the power lies over there. That is, all the power lies in us, that we are the source of all the power, and we can create, using this power, whatever we choose to experience in our reality. But where does God fit into all of this? She said, I'm a fundamentalist Christian, and I know that not everyone is, but I think that a lot of people do have ideas about God in their life, and I'm just kind of trying to figure out, where does God fit into all of this? And Oprah said, that's a wonderful question. Sure. Because when I first saw the movie The Secret, I had this exact same question. Okay, fair enough, this is a very powerful tool, but how does it fit into my own personal reality? How does it fit into my traditional thinking, for that matter, on this subject? And how does it integrate with a thought that I've held for a long time, that if ever I needed help in my life, or if ever I wanted something to show up in my life, if ever I desired something wonderful to occur in my life, or if ever, for that matter, I wanted to see what I could do to create a better world and peace on our planet, if I wanted those things, I always thought that the way to get them was to pray to God and to ask God for help and assistance and to be my source of supply. Now here I'm hearing a whole new idea about this, that all I have to do is go within, rearrange my thoughts, have a new idea about it, speak my word, and I am the source of all of that. So how does that integrate into more traditional ways of thinking in terms of our interaction with the divine? And that does drive to the question of how we can create peace on our planet, because I want to suggest here in this telephone call that the reason that there even is a secret to share with anyone is because that which is divine created the universe to function that way, that the secret is God, if I could put it in one word. And I don't think that that is exactly said in such specific and direct terms in the current discussions and explorations around the secret. So let me say it again in one straightforward sentence and then contextualize what we're going to talk about in terms of how to create peace on Earth. The secret is God. Mm. And now people have been saying, well, but now wait a minute, you know, all the teachers on the movie and in the book are saying that the secret lies within us and that all we have to do is speak our word and rearrange our thinking and create positive ideas and visualizations and thoughts and all of that. Now here comes Neil Donald Walsh saying the secret is God, and that seems to be placing it outside of us again. Uh-oh, here we go. There's a bit of confusion there. Neil, help us out. And here's my response to that, because I've already heard that from audiences when I've shared this with people here on this very tour that I'm on. You see, the challenge comes in terms of our thinking of who and what God is and where is God. You're going to think that there's a contradiction in between what I've said and what the movie is saying if you think that God exists or resides outside of yourself. But when I say the secret is God, I am meaning to say that I agree with everything that is said in the movie The Secret and in the book The Secret by all of those wonderful teachers. Yes, it is a process of rearranging our thinking, of creating new thoughts, of saying our affirmations, of visualizing what we want, and of speaking our word. It absolutely is all of that. And the secret is God. Because God is that essence of life in the universe that lives within us and acts through us to create the outcomes that are collectively desired and co-created by the lot of us. What I'm saying is that we are all elements and individuations of the divine essence that we call in this culture God, or Allah, or Brahman, or Yahweh, or Jehovah, or by whatever name it pleases us to refer to that ineffable essence of life. In my cosmology and in my vocabulary, I call that God. And that there is no separation between us, and that's the why of how it works. That there is no separation between the source and the user of that which is sourced. There is no separation between the creator and the created. That when we use the law of attraction, we are simply using that which is divine within each of us. We are calling upon that part of us which is divine and which is connected with the divine, and using that aspect of our inner being to produce our outer reality.
Now, how this really... Let me interrupt for 1 second here, because this is really beautiful and so important what you're saying. I don't think anyone has quite expressed it in this way, you know, by saying that literally the secret is God. So what you're talking about is applying the principle of divinity to act as God acts, to give as God gives, and this is how we draw into our lives and into the world all the things that we want, that we feel that we need. So my question is, the idea of getting something outside of ourselves that we believe that we don't have, this is, you know, where it begins. This is where a lot of people are beginning with it anyway. This seems to me to be driven by the ego. But what you're suggesting here really is that principle of divinity which only gives. So my question is the real application of the secret about giving as God gives, and in giving that, in giving peace or whatever that might be, to understand that we already have that thing, and this is what raises us and brings us to the next level in the secret or in our experience of God.
Yes, that is exactly right, and I would put it in my words this way. The secret behind the secret, if you please, the secret of the secret, is that we have no need to ask for anything, that we already have it, that it is already there, that it is a part of our basic nature. And I want to relate that to the question about peace in the world in just a minute, because there's a direct relationship between what I'm saying and peace in the world. But let me just double back here very quickly and respond even more specifically to what you just said, James. Yes, that is correct, that the real secret of the secret is that we don't use the secret to ask for or to somehow call in that which is not there, so that somehow life can be more beautiful or wonderful or harmonious for us. In fact, the secret behind the secret is that the essence of who we are is already that. It is already peace. It is already abundance. It is already total and perfect health. It is already love. And it is already all that we would imagine that we are missing or that we think that we need.
Conversations with God. Is it fair to say that the first step in getting there is to use it to draw in the things that we don't have? I mean, for a lot of people, this is what the application is, and they stop there. What I'm hearing from you and what I believe as well is that that's the first step, and a lot of people have to begin there. You know, we have to start in kindergarten before we can move to the higher grades. Is that where we begin, and then do we move into these other things that you're describing after that?
It's a way to go. It's one way that we can go. We can use that law of attraction and test it out, if you please. We can put it to the test, and then we get surprised, and we say, oh, my goodness, this stuff really works. Oh, my goodness, this is really powerful. I wouldn't have believed it if I hadn't seen it, but, you know, I set my intention, and there we are 2 weeks later, and it's starting to show up in my life, or 2 days later or 2 hours later. It's starting to show up in my life. Isn't that amazing? And then we become aware of the power that resides within us. That's one way to go. That's one. The danger, however, is that we might think, because we imagine that we are creating it ourselves, that it can't be created. Here's the danger of misusing the secret in that particular way for some people. The first thought that so many people have when considering using the secret, that is the law of attraction, is, well, you know, I really don't have that much power. I can't imagine how I could create financial abundance or the right and perfect partner or the perfect job, the perfect career, to say nothing of something as grandiose as peace on earth. How in the world could I even think in those terms? It's just outside of my realm of ability to embrace as my own, to own for myself, to comprehend, to understand. I can't do that. So we start from, most people start from, especially if you start talking about larger things like peace on earth.
Right.
When you say to the person, can you create peace on earth? I'm certain that if you took a clipboard and marched down the mall with a clipboard in your hand and interviewed the 100 people, that 98 out of the first 100 people, if you ask them, can you create peace on earth? I mean globally. I don't mean peace in your life, peace at your dinner table, peace in your place of business. I mean peace on earth. Can you, do you feel that you are capable of creating peace on earth? I suspect that 98 out of 100 people would say, and that's a, it's a bit large of an agenda, or rather, I don't think I can do that. Because, you see, they think they're doing it. It's the same reason that, that if you don't understand the secret deeply and understand the source of the secret, that the secret is God. If you think that the secret is you using positive thinking, if you think that the secret is you using affirmations, if you think that the secret is you using the power of your word, if that's what you think that you're doing, and you're not clear that what you're simply doing is utilizing the power of God that resides within you as you, moving through you, if that's not made absolutely clear in your reality around the secret, then you will start from a place of doubt, at least a fair amount of doubt, if not absolute denial. Doubt, if not denial, of your ability to produce that result, which, of course, makes the problem three times as difficult, if not utterly impossible. On the other hand, if you come from a place that says, this is not me doing this, the secret works precisely because it's not me doing it. That's the reason why the secret works. The secret works because I am simply answering God's invitation to use the essence of divinity within me to produce the outcome, and God is capable of producing any outcome at all.
Okay,
including,
so let's slow down for a moment, because this is
including
so,
peace on earth.
So great, and so what you're talking about here is the beginning is the misapplication, which is thinking that it's us doing. But what we're the next step, and what we're describing now is really what the secret really is all about, is that it does us. It's not about us doing; it's about it doing us, right? And in that sense, we become instruments of the secret rather than thinking that we're the one wielding, it's wielding us. Would that be fair to say?
I think that's a very, very wonderful way to put it, that we become instruments of God. And then it's simply a matter of joining with that which we imagine to be or understand to be or know to be the divine in determining what is God's will. Now, and that's another whole question we can talk about as well. But yes, I think you've got it now framed correctly. It's about. So I think that the first step, to me, it feels like the first step, is re-identification, to re-identify ourselves. The first step to me does not feel to be. I mean, as I said before, you can do it that way. You can take the first step as you described. Go ahead and use the law of attraction and see how it works in your life. But a lot of people, for every person that says, "Oh wow, the law of attraction really worked," I can give you another person that says, "You know what? I've been saying my affirmations for the past 6 months, and it ain't happening."
Right.
And they even had a guy with James Ray on the national television. I think it was the Today Show or one of those programs a couple of days ago, talking exactly about that, saying that be careful, because if you start putting too much stock in your own ability to create the outcome you want, you're liable to come to a crashing halt, you're liable to really come crashing down. Because you'll put so much faith and so much stock in your own ability to create this outcome that you're liable to act in ways that are irrational and then set up expectations you can't possibly meet. So
your ability as separate from that divine source. But what you're saying is that once we realize that we cannot be separate from that divine source, doesn't that then instill humility and the more we realize that, the more humble we become, because it's not us who's doing it, but it's rather God is doing it through us.
Humility replaces what could be a temptation toward arrogance. You're exactly right. And so I think that the first step in applying the secret is the step of what I call re-identification. That is to simply rearrange our thinking about ourselves, to let ourselves understand completely and to know fully, I am that which I have been praying to, and that the essence of divinity, the essence of godliness, is part of, part and parcel of the essence of myself. I am that, and I'm calling upon the larger part of that, the larger part of that of which I am an individuation, to now move through me, that I might do its will. And its will, by the way, is for me to be abundant. Its will, God's will, is for me to be happy, to be harmonious, to be healthy, to have the right and perfect partner, to have a wonderful career, to have a wonderful life, and for peace to prevail on earth, for all people to be joyous and happy. That is, in fact, the will of the divine. So that when I allow God's will to flow through me, of course I bring myself the experience of that which I already have. Perfect health, abundance, perfect partnership, perfect career, all the wonderful things that cause us to be healthy, harmonious, and happy on this planet. Of course, because that's God's will. And it's not because I want it, but because not only does God wish that for me, God wishes that for me so much that God has already supplied it to me. And all I need to do is call it forth from the already existing supply.
So seek first the kingdom of God, and everything else is given to us.
That's exactly in one sentence. And that's why all the great teachers, that's a brilliant contribution, James, because that's why all the great teachers, and Jesus said it in his words, and other great teachers have said it in their words as well. So don't go around asking, what are we to eat? What are we to drink? Wherewithal shall we clothe ourselves? Keep your mind where? On the kingdom of heaven, and all else will be added unto you, and it happens automatically, just as you've said, James, and that's the reason why. So I think that when we discuss the secret, we have to really lay a lot of emphasis on this first part or this first step, the why as well as the how. We've talked a lot when we discussed the secret about how it works. Well, you can say your affirmations, and you can do your visualizations, and you can speak your word and all of that. But I want to lay emphasis on, why does that work? Why does that work? I mean, what is it? Even science tells us that it works, but why does it work? And that's why. And once we understand why, it shifts our ground of being, and we no longer come from that place that where the lady was asking on the Oprah show. We no longer come from that place of thinking, oh, I've got this new wonderful power that I can use that I never realized before. I can really do amazing things. We come from a new place called, oh, God has this wonderful power, which I've known about all along. God can really do amazing things. All I just didn't understand, the missing element for me, the secret, was that God and I are one.
God has to use us to wield that power. And that's what it means to be an instrument of peace. That's what St. Francis meant when he said, you know, make me an instrument of peace. So, Neil, I want to shift gears just for a second, because now that we've established the why, let's begin to reach out a bit, you know, into this so-called world that we've created and how we can apply this. Now, you've said something many times that I've always loved, and I would love for you to talk a little bit about this. You say that the problems of the world are not political or social or even economic, that there is a deeper source that is actually a deeper reason that is actually causing the problems of the world. Can you speak to that?
Yes, I'd be happy to. We are living in a pathology right now. We have a pathological behavior pattern on the earth that has been created in the first instance by a misunderstanding of the essence of our being, as I've been saying now for the past few moments, and a misunderstanding of who we are in relationship to all the rest of the stuff that is all the rest of life. You're right. The problem facing the world has not been solved by politics. We throw all the politics at it that we can, and it produces no outcome that has lasting impact. It is not an economic problem. We can throw all the money at it or withhold the money from it, as in sanctions or whatever, and it only produces, if at best, temporary outcomes. And then, of course, it's not a military problem either, but once politics fail and economics fail, then we imagine it's a military problem. The problem facing humanity today is a spiritual problem, and it can only be solved by spiritual means, by a spiritual solution. And when I talk in terms of a spiritual solution, I mean this. We need to come to spiritual clarity, here we go again, about our spiritual identity, not only as individuals, but as a species called humanity. See, we have been living a cultural story on this planet for a very long time of separation. And it's a cultural story that has been created by our separation theologies in the main. With respect to all the world's great religions, and they have so much of value, so much of greatness to share with us and to teach us, but I believe that the world's great religions are simply limited. They're just not complete. They're just incomplete in the information that they've brought to us. And where they are incomplete is that most of the world's major religions tell us that we're over here and God is over there. And that's what I call a separation theology. And so we pray to God and ask God to help us as we continue to find our way back to God. And that separation theology has created a separation cosmology, that is a way of looking at the world that says that not only are we separate from God, but we are separate in some sense from life itself. Life is something that we are living and experiencing, and we are observing it and participating in it. And that separation cosmology has created a separation sociology, that is a way of interacting on the planet that says, I'm over here and you're over there. And that separation sociology has ultimately produced a separation pathology, a pathological tendency toward experiencing ourselves as other than the rest of humanity. And only a pathology of separation could allow humanity to permit, for instance, something like Darfur, to use one example, to occur, or could allow 400 children an hour to die of starvation on our planet. Because, of course, we're over here and they're over there. We're not happy about it. We do it the best we can to stop it. But at some root level, we find it difficult to get supremely motivated to simply disallow it altogether. So we've created a species that could allow such things to occur. And we tisk-tisk. Isn't it just a shame? But we allow it nonetheless. And, of course, what we allow, by extension, we create. And that's something that humanity needs now to understand as we begin to delve into the further workings of the secret. So the huge part of the secret has to do with our identity. To me, the secret, again I say, to me the secret has to do with who we are in relationship to life, in relationship to each other, and in relationship to the thing that some of us call God. The secret is God. Now, when I understand that, I suddenly experience that separation theology evaporates from my inner understandings. I don't hold that as a thought about myself. The cultural story of humanity, as I observe it, begins to shift and change within me. I see myself as one with everything else that is. And that shifts and changes my relational activity, my interactions with everything else on the planet. It creates a qualitative, not merely a quantitative, but a qualitative shift in the way that I interact with everyone, economically, politically, socially, spiritually, and in every other way that I could possibly imagine. If enough people begin to embrace and adopt that larger identity as being one with everyone else, not just my brother's keeper, but my brother in fact, if that becomes the way we interact with each other, we create in one generation an entirely new way of living upon the earth. And that's the ultimate intention of the secret.
Okay, let me play the devil's advocate for a moment. Because what you're saying is that if enough of us were to begin to see each other and ourselves in that way, that the secret would begin to operate on its own. It would not have to be a conscious thing that we try and make happen. It would simply happen. So the question is, let's say that there are, you know, millions of people who are doing that, or at least have a fundamental level of understanding of that law. There's still billions more, at least at this point, who are unconscious of it. So can a small number, a relatively small number, of people who are applying what you just described really begin to produce a lasting shift in the mass consciousness?
Yes, and it's always happened. Whenever there's been any kind of upshift of our consciousness, the process of evolution itself, by the way, evolution is not merely a physical thing. It's a psychological thing, it's an emotional thing, and it's a spiritual thing. That is, we are evolving at every level of our experience, not merely physically. In other words, we have new thoughts about ourselves, which is not a physical experience at all. Our thinking, as well as our physicality, has changed through the years. Slowly but surely, we think differently now about ourselves and about life than we did 5,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, and even for that matter, 200 years ago. The last great shift in our thinking was the Renaissance. And it's a perfect example of what you've now just raised. At the period of time before the Renaissance, there may not have been 6 billion people on the earth, but there was a sufficient number to still make it look like it's impossible to change things. And in fact, from one point of view, it might have been impossible to change things. But a small handful of people nonetheless said, you know what? This just doesn't seem like the way we should be living life on the planet. And over a period of time, in the case of the Renaissance, it took around 300 years, and the Reformation was part of that. The Reformation was the reforming, of course, of the world's great religions. But the Renaissance was more than about shifting our ideas about religion. It was about shifting our ideas about governance, economics, how we do commerce, art and culture, music, all of it. And at the end of the Renaissance, which took, as I said, around 300 years, we had a completely different way of being human. I mean, it was utterly different, a completely different way of interacting with each other in commerce, in business, in industry, in politics, in society, and spiritually. And the shift was enormous, and that's why it took 300 years. We now understand that with instantaneity, the quality of instantaneous transfer of data and thoughts and information from one person to another around the earth, created by the Internet and other ways of being, that we will reduce that number by a factor of 10, that is the time, the number of years that it takes to produce those outcomes. And rather than taking 300 years, we can achieve the same kind of quantum leap in around 30 years. And it does not take but a small percentage of people to reach critical mass in order to produce that first domino falling and the other outcomes rolling out from that. So we're not even looking at a very large percentage of those 6.5 billion people who now reside upon the earth. Scientists, this is science, by the way, not simply spirituality. Science now tells us that critical mass in any system is not one more than half, not one more than 25%, it's not 10%, not even 5%. It's somewhere between 2 and 3.5% of the whole. That is, when 2 to 3% of the surface of the water starts bubbling, instantly you have critical mass and the entire surface of the water bubbles. If you watch water boiling, you will notice that there's a little bubble here and a little bubble there, and suddenly there's bubbles all across the top of the water. That's when you reach critical mass. And that critical point of critical mass is, they tell us, between 2 and 3.5% of the whole of any system. Suddenly we see how the Renaissance was possible. And suddenly we see how the Reformation could have taken place. And suddenly we see the grand possibility of the 21st century.
You know, I'd like to add one thing to your analogy of the Renaissance, Neil, which is that in the beginning of any revolution or evolution like the Renaissance, there is usually one person or a group of people, small group of people, who are the catalyst that get people going. And in the case of the Renaissance, many historians say that certainly one of those people was St. Francis of Assisi. The one who is at least attributed to saying, you know, to giving us this whole analogy of being used as an instrument of peace, everything that we're talking about, that we need to surrender to the point that the secret, or God, as you're saying, moves through us and acts upon us and acts upon the world through us. St. Francis was a great example, and he inspired all of Europe, certainly, and so many authors and poets and painters and sculptors, and he was a trigger point. And so now each one of us need to likewise think of ourselves as a trigger point, because like Margaret Mead said, you know, don't think that a small group of dedicated people can't change the world. In fact, it's the only thing that ever has. We are the ones that have to do that. So thank you. Now, one of the things that we've been doing on this call is opening up for questions. And though we can't hear you, you can only hear us, we do have a way for you to ask a couple of questions. You're going to be able to send us an email. We'll be able to take one or two questions today before we close the call. So, Robert, why don't you come on again, and why don't you tell us really quickly what that email address is. And if you have a question, send it in really quick, and we're going to take one or two of them. So, Robert, what is that address?
Okay, for this call, we set up a new email because we got hundreds and hundreds of emails yesterday that I don't want to filter through in this call. So what I'd like you to do is email your questions to call2, that's the number 2, C-A-L-L, 2, at 64daysofpeace.com. That's the number 64, and daysofpeace.com. So it's call2 at 64daysofpeace.com.
Great.
sitting in front of that email right now, and I'll want you guys continue to chat, and I'll
while we're waiting for a couple of questions to come through, this might be a good opportunity just to mention a couple of things that will be follow-ups to these calls. We mentioned yesterday that tomorrow we're going to have two other amazing teachers, Debbie Ford and Jean Houston. This is going to be an amazing conversation as well. And Debbie Ford and I have gotten together, and we've put together a follow-up conference course that if you want to participate in, we're going to be dealing with a lot of the shadow aspects. What's keeping you from accessing this information? We're calling this the Mystic's Secret. So if you want to get more information on that or to sign up for that course, you can go to my website, jamestwyman.com, T-W-Y-M-A-N. And one other possibility, if you really want to find a practical way of applying this teaching and being a spiritual peacemaker, I am going to be leading a group of people to Israel coming up in May, because something really important is happening that I want everyone in the world to know. About 5,000 people are going to be gathering in Jerusalem on May 21st, and the idea is to get them completely encircling the outside of the old city, so completely encircling the outer wall, and we are literally going to hug the old city and activate the energy of peace by projecting our peace, 5,000 people projecting peace into the old city. Just imagine how amazing that's going to be. So we're going to be bringing a group of people over there to participate in that. We would love for you to join us if you really want a practical application. So once again, go to my website, jamestwyman.com, if you want more information on that. So, Robert, do we have a question?
Yeah, let's see here. We got our first question is from Angela. Says Angela asks, either you or Neil, how do you know when you are engaged in the act of creating something with your own thoughts and feelings, or are you sensing, witnessing, and experiencing the arrival of the event that is coming into form? She's wondering, how do you know if you're creating something, or are you sensing it, witnessing it, and experiencing the arrival of it as it's coming into form?
I understand the question. Angela, the answer is you're doing both. You are creating and sensing what you're creating simultaneously. And if what you're sensing that you're creating does not feel like what you intend to create, in other words, if something comes into your reality and you say, oh, I must be sensing that, I certainly am not creating that, I don't want to create that consciously, then what I would say is change your idea about it. Shift your notion and add a different energy. Just notice that at some level there is a part of you that has created that, and you may not even understand why or how that is functioning. See, but you are in fact at some level creating all of the outcomes that you are sensing in your exterior experience. So the master is one who never denies his role in the creation of all present realities. May I repeat that, please? The master is one who never denies the role that he or she is creating in the process of producing the outcomes that are in evidence all around him. So the master never says, hey, I didn't do that, I didn't do that, I didn't do that. That's not my intention, that's not my intention. The master simply says, oh, I see that I created, or at least in part, co-created what I'm now looking at. I co-created what I am now sensing. I see that if that's not what I choose to continue to co-create, I now need to shift my ground of being and to work with people. I don't want to pander here, but people like James Twyman and others. If, for instance, we want to co-create something like world peace, then we start doing things like going to Israel, hugging the city. You know, we ought to have a thing called hugthecity.com and then hugthenation.com, then ultimately hugtheworld.com. What James is going to do in the next 4 years is he's going to first have Hug the City programs, not only in Israel, but in other trouble spots around the world as well.
Great idea.
And then in 3 years, he's going to have Hug the Nation. He's going to get enough people to circle an entire nation. And then in 10 years, he's going to have Hug the World. And 10 years from today, he'll have hugtheworld.com, where we'll just link hands all around the planet. Watch
Robert,
this happen.
Those domain names right now, please.
Watch this happen. And so so the answer, Angela, is yes to both questions. You are sensing what you're experiencing. You're observing it, and there is no difference. You asked, how can I tell the difference? No, there is no difference. The master is one who knows that there is no difference between what I'm looking at and what I'm creating. And if I'm looking at something that I don't consciously choose to create, that is, it doesn't seem like it's what I want, then I get to choose again. And I get to act on what I'm choosing until the world gets it.
Thank you very much, Neil. Robert, okay. Do we have another question?
Yeah, we've got a couple more questions here. This is coming from Shelley. Shelley asks, please talk about negative thinking and how to overcome it and be able to visualize what you want in life. And she asks also to talk about God within and that being part of that creating process.
So how to overcome negative thinking. Neil, you want to take that one?
Well, stop it. Just stop it.
I'm not sure what the question is. How do you... Maybe the question is,
how do you stop it? Very simple. You just stop it. You simply just stop it. You know, it's an act of will. First you notice it. Okay, let's create a little process. First you notice it. Of course, sometimes people think negatively and they don't notice it, by the way. I'm not kidding here. So, you know, people talk to us and say, did you hear what you just said? And then you realize, oh, my God, I did just say that. So the first thing is to become aware, deeply aware. Notice what you're thinking, saying, and doing. Watch yourself. Don't become obsessive about it, but just gently observe yourself and watch yourself. Step one, notice it. Step two, when you notice yourself thinking negatively, or if someone else points it out to you and says, yeah, you've been kind of negative lately, you feeling all right or whatever, when the universe starts to signal, by the way, this is another way to notice it, when the universe starts to signal to you that you're thinking negatively, and that signal will come in terms of the outcomes that you're experiencing in your life. So notice it, and then when you notice it, change your mind about that. Just say to yourself, okay, I don't choose. Devil, Satan, get thee behind me. Satan, by the way, is an acronym. The acronym that I've created for Satan is seeing all things as negative. Mm. Or for that matter, seeing anything as negative. That's S-A-T-A-N, Satan. So when you start seeing something in a negative way and you begin to experience yourself having a negative thought, just as a sheer act of will, this is called willpower, just willpower. Just, you know, you ask, how can I change negative thinking? By doing it, by simply just saying, I'm not going to think that way anymore. Excuse me, I choose again. Excuse me, I'm having another thought about that. And then move into an act of pure creation. Think a new thought. Visualize something that's exactly the opposite of that negative impulse that just went through you. And then you begin to learn and train yourself. After a while, you'll be so well conditioned to do that that whenever any negative thought comes through, you'll just say, oh, erase that, and you'll create a positive thought in its place. And in terms of experiencing God within you, I don't know what works best for you, but I know what works best for me. I experience God within me when I cause someone else to experience God within them.
Yes, for it is in giving that we receive. And I want to mention a subtext to almost everything that we have said here today, which is to realize that this is working, the secret is working through us every moment, whether we realize it or not, whether we are conscious of it or not. We are always using the creative power of divinity within us because we cannot be separated from it, and it's our thoughts that are actually guiding our experience of the world that we perceive. So the world that we create can sometimes be harmonious or disharmonious. The world we create can often be negative in this sense. And we sometimes wonder, well, why is this happening to me? Why do bad things always happen to me? I think the beginning of this, and even to answer this question, is to realize that in the truest sense, and this is not a reason to make yourself feel guilty, and in fact it's a way to make yourself feel more powerful, this is happening not to you but by you. That you have been using the secret actually to create a world based upon the belief that you're separate, that you're alone, that you're weak, that you're sinful, or whatever those things might be. So those negative thoughts have literally created the world that you perceive. And now that we're conscious of that, now that we can begin forming a new habit, like Neil just said, we can begin using this to create what our soul wants, not just what our ego wants. Because, of course, the ego wants to maintain that separation. The ego, or that part of you that thinks it's separate from God and everything else, wants you to maintain the idea that you're alone and sinful and base and all these different things. But if we can begin to now change our mind about who we are by, as Neil said, giving it away to another, by helping others to see this, then we begin to get it automatically. And the world begins, our world, the world that I'm perceiving individually and collectively ultimately, begins to shift on its own because I've chosen a different way of seeing it. I think that is the entire subtext to everything we've been saying.
I say something to my audiences that sometimes, once in a while, actually startles them or startles some members of the audience. I say to them, I understand that you may not think that you have the personal power to do any of these things, to produce any of these outcomes, much less an outcome like peace on earth. But do you think that God does? Can God produce peace on earth and peace in your life? Can God bring you your right and perfect partner? Can God bring you your right and perfect career? Can God bring you abundance, health, and happiness? And can God create a world that you are happy to give to your children and your grandchildren? And everyone says, anyone who has a belief in God, they all say, of course, sure, God can do that. And then I'd say, well, then why isn't God? If God can do that, then why isn't God doing it? And then I say something that stops the audience. They're in stunned silence. I say to them this. I want you to consider the possibility that your every thought is a prayer. Your every word is a prayer. Your every action is a prayer. And that the world is the way it is today because of the thoughts, words, and actions of the largest number of people.
Every thought is a prayer and is creating the world that we are perceiving this moment. I think that is probably the perfect thought for us to begin to wrap this call up. This has been an amazing and important call. And Neil, I'm just so grateful for your input. And so I would ask you if there is anything, you know, any last comment that you could make that can help us to bridge that gap between using the secret to either create disharmony in our lives and or the world, or to use it harmoniously, what would you say about that?
Change your identity. Get a new identification card. Go to the DMV and get a new identification card. Change your idea about who you are. Life is a process of re-identification. And if I had to say one sentence to people, I would say, re-identify yourself. Change your idea of who you are. And, when I go out and give my talks, I'm giving a talk here in about 3 or 4 hours here in Saskatoon. The first thing I say to my audience, which again, it just sets up the entire evening, I stand up, they applaud, I say, thank you very much, it's good to be here, and let me tell you who I am. You think that I'm Neil Donald Walsh, but I've come here to tell you that I am the living representative of God on earth. And there's, again, stunned silence. Nobody knows what to do with a statement like that. And then I pause for about 3 seconds and I say, and so are you.
Yes.
So are you. Can we go from there, please, to create this evening and this life and this world?
Well, that's the whole thing right there. Thank you so much, Neil. This has been an amazing discussion, and I want to thank everyone else for being with us today. I want to thank Robert and everyone on your staff to pass along. Most of all, I want to thank the 11,000 people who are joining us on this call. And I think that is an extraordinary number, the fact that there are 11,000 people and probably tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands or even millions more who are simply not here because they haven't heard about this call yet. We're going to try and find some creative ways to get these recordings out to as many people as possible. But I just want to acknowledge everyone who is saying yes to this, who is realizing what Neil just said, what Neil just expressed so beautifully, that this is the moment, and it's through each and every single one of us this new world is going to come into reality. How do we use the secret to create world peace? We use it through our own individual moment-to-moment lives. It is through us that this happens, through each one of us. So thank you, Neil. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.
Hey, Jimmy, can I interject for a second?
Yes. Yeah,
Robert. Why don't you tell everybody about what you got coming up here soon with Pass Along, this new creation that you've been working on?
Well, I'm thinking of producing a book, and it's going to have one of two working titles right now. One title that I'm working with is the title, The Secret Behind the Secret. And it's largely what I've just said today. It's recontextualizing the secret itself and creating a holder or a container which allows us to understand the power that fuels the effectiveness of the use of this secret. The second working title that I'm working with, I can't decide which one to use, is The Secret is God. But I'm going to have that book finished, I hope. It's a very short little booklet, which I expect to have finished here within just a few days. I'm writing on it now here on the road, and it's coming through very, very quickly. It's not going to be a long book, a short little pamphlet, but a very powerful booklet. And I hope to have it ready in about 2 or 3 weeks, perhaps a month at the most, for distribution. I'm very excited about it because I want to be able to share much of what I said here today in this telephone call with people the world over.
Wonderful. Thank you, everyone. It's great to have you. Please join us again. We'll be starting at the same time tomorrow, which is Friday, with Debbie Ford and Gene Houston. We're going to keep taking this to the next level, and we hope that you can join us. And, of course, if you don't make it on the call live, always remember that we will be posting these recordings almost immediately, so you can go the same day to listen to them and to really get, you know, all this amazing information. So, Neil, thank you so much for taking the time out to join us. And Robert and everyone else, blessings to all of you. And let's just keep on moving forward.
Thank you, James, and goodbye for now.